This is really about areas of your life that you should negotiate, really, right? When we say ask questions, you're really negotiating. You're negotiating with your credit card company, your hospital, right? To get a better deal.
And one of the things that I address in the book is just how much people don't like to negotiate or to advocate for themselves. Even if they know that they're probably going to do pretty well at it. And that's unfortunate. And one of the things that I talk about is that people don't understand how much actual negotiating experience they have just in daily life, where maybe you're negotiating what you want the thermostat to be set at your house, or where you're going to go to dinner with a bunch of friends, or things like that, little tiny things. The willingness and ability to negotiate and to ask certain questions and to just talk to people can really make a significant difference.
Hey guys, and welcome to Money Talks News, the podcast. This episode, we're talking about how asking the right money questions can help you find your own version of financial freedom. You know, when it comes to money, most people want answers, right? But sometimes getting ahead isn't about getting answers. It's about asking the right questions, like why we're doing what we're doing and where we want to end up when we do it. I'm Stacy Johnson. As usual, my co-host will be financial journalist Miranda Marquette. Hello, Miranda.
Hey, Stacy. I'm excited for this one.
I am excited, too. I'm always excited to be on the air with you. Listening in and sometimes contributing is our producer and novice investor, Aaron Freeman. Hello, Aaron. I'm also excited to be on the air with you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I'm always asking myself vital money questions all the time.
Yeah, me too. And I'm going to give you some answers, too. This Good. Week, we Thank welcome you. Back Matt Schultz, chief credit analyst at LendingTree and author of the book, Ask Questions, Save Money, Make More, How to Take Control of Your Financial Life. Welcome back, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Why is the title of your book so long, dude? I mean, it's pretty long there.
Well, you know, all the important things have really long titles. So, you know, there you go.
My first book was called Life or Debt, Matt. What does that say?
No comment.
Before we start, folks, remember, this is not financial advice you're hearing on this podcast. So make sure you do your own research and consult your own experts before acting on anything you may learn here. Okay. Let's dive in. Like I said at the intro there, Matt, people want answers, but you're saying, hey, maybe we should start asking questions first. What kind of questions should we be asking?
Well, there's all sorts of questions, and really in all kind of aspects of personal finance. And what these questions do is they help you take a little bit more power back as it relates to your money. And the whole idea for the book came from the fact that in my day job at LendingTree, I've done a million interviews talking about how 3/4 of people who ask for a lower interest rate on their credit card get one, but too few people ever ask. So there's a lot of other things like that in the personal finance space and then just kind of in life in general. And the book, the goal of the book is to help people feel more comfortable asking those questions and also helping people just understand the why as to what gives them the power that they don't necessarily realize that they have.
But how do I know what kind of, like, you just brought up a really good thing. And I've done that story a million times over the years. If you ask for a lower interest rate, you'll often get one. But how do I know to ask that question?
Well, ultimately, that's you pick up a copy of Ask Questions, Save Money, Make More, available for pre-order now. Really the short answer to that is that if you are wondering about it, go ahead and ask, because chances are the odds of them listening to you are better than you realize. And I think that part of the reason for that is something that people don't necessarily kind of see about themselves. And that's the fact that they are valuable to businesses. And a lot of times that lifetime value that you have as a customer makes it to where a business is willing to waive a $40 late fee or give you a logo t-shirt or something like that to keep you around, because they know that giving you that little bit of extra money is going to make you really happy and make you spend more with them. So ultimately, it's worth them doing.
I've done that, where I've called up a credit card company and asked for a lower interest rate, and they actually did it. Do you think, is that because that by the process of calling, that puts you as a, hey, I'm an enlightened customer, I know I can go get another lower interest rate credit card, so I'm asking you to do it, because if you don't do it, I'm skipping town?
There's certainly some of that, yeah. And there can be value in the same way that there's value in walking out of a car dealership, you know, being able to walk away from an offer there. It's the same thing with a credit card and with other things. The credit card marketplace in particular is just crazy competitive. And if you pay your bills regularly, if you spend on that card, chances are they're going to listen to you and at least consider giving you something. I mean, there's obviously no guarantee, but the fact that those success rates, the like 75% success rate, has been that way for years and years, even you know, back to when I was doing a similar survey when I worked at a different company. It shows you that this isn't just a thing for when times are good, when times are bad, when there's a pandemic, when there's not a pandemic, whatever. It's just something that people can do, and it's really often not much more difficult than just picking up the phone.
Cool. But in your book called "Ask Questions, Save Money, Make More: How to Take Control of Your Financial Life." See, I'm plugging you here, Matt. You mentioned there are seven different areas where we should be asking questions. One of them obviously is credit. We just talked about that, and you also mentioned health. What questions should we be asking about health?
Well, healthcare. When I was writing the book, this was really the most fascinating aspect of it to write, because it can be so impactful. And it's also an area where people feel so intimidated to ask, and because it's so confusing and convoluted so many times. And the truth is that a lot of people who spend their entire lives in this area, healthcare, patient advocacy, and all that, will tell you that a lot of times the first medical bill that you get is almost a work of fiction, and you end up needing to, well, one of the most important questions you need to ask is the bill that I got accurate, and is it actually representing what I had done when I went to the doctor? And that's a really significant thing. And the book kind of lays out some steps as to how to do that. And the truth is that while when you're talking about getting a credit card late fee waived, you might be talking about $40 with healthcare, you can be talking about thousands and thousands of dollars. And it's a really big deal.
I know that I've done that story too over the years about how medical bills are often incorrect. But if insurance is paying for it, what do I care?
Yeah, there certainly is that. And it's the most important, this aspect of things is the most important for folks who don't have insurance or don't have sufficient insurance. And sometimes also, especially with things like prescriptions, there's the case where you can end up, you can be better served essentially without using your insurance. And so asking for something like the cash rate, when you go to the pharmacy, and seeing if it might be cheaper to get your prescription filled that way than by using your insurance is something that people need to know as well.
Yeah, and actually, I've done stories too about negotiating your medical, your bills with the hospital, just like you with, you know, negotiating your interest rate with your credit card company. You can actually do that if you get a giant bill. I mean, obviously, if you're insured, you don't have as much to worry about. But you can actually negotiate with hospitals quite easily to have your charges reduced. Is that part of your deal too? I mean, you think that's true?
Oh yeah, it's absolutely true. And some of it is about whether it's accurate or not, but some of it is just being willing to ask. You know, hey, would you be willing to? Would you be willing to take this? Literally just kind of being vulnerable and saying, I'm on a budget, and is there any way that you can work with me? And a lot of times they will.
You know, when I had a procedure done a few years ago, you know, the insurance didn't cover the whole amount. And so I was left with, you know, a few thousand dollars that I needed to pay. And instead of paying it all at once, the other thing I did was just call and say, hey, like, do you have a payment plan? And it was an interest-free payment plan. And a lot of people see that big bill. And the first thing, like Matt said, is to say like, okay, is this accurate? Can I get an itemized bill? Ask for an itemized bill.
Yes.
Get it all itemized so you can look at it and say, wait a second, what is this? And then once you've done that, and you've verified what's on the bill, then you can say, hey, what's your payment plan like? And I was, you know, and so I was just like, yeah, I feel like I can do, you know, $250 a month. And so they put me on this payment plan. It was a 0% interest payment plan. It was not a loan. I didn't have to pay interest on it. And all of that was because I was like, hey, can we do this, instead of like going, oh my gosh, how will I ever be able to pay this bill without completely draining my emergency fund?
And that's a perfect example. And it's something where a doctor or medical provider, instead of mentioning that 0% interest payment plan, might instead put a medical credit card in front of you. And if you don't know to ask, it can end up being a really, really, really bad choice.
When it comes to asking important questions, NPR did a really interesting piece on how there's nothing regulated in pricing in healthcare. And if you are fortunate enough to live in an area like we do, which is, you know, three cities within driving distance, you have a lot of options. You have to call these shops up because, let's say you don't have great healthcare coverage. If you need an MRI or something like that, it can cost you $3,000 in one joint, and in another shop down the road, it can literally be the same machine for $300.
Yeah.
So you have to call these people and ask them, hey, what does it cost? And you'll get all kinds of different pricing. Another thing is, we had a friend who got referred. They needed a procedure. They got referred out. Where they got referred to, you think your doctor was, you know, up and up on your insurance and who they should refer you out to. They're not. And they got referred out to somebody that wasn't under their insurance coverage. And they went to their procedure at 6 a.m. in the morning and said, file here, sign this, sign this, sign this. And they ended up signing away and got a huge bill because they didn't realize, oh my God, I'm signing away to something that's not covered.
Well, and one of the things that makes the doctor relationship complicated is that it's a relationship, and it's somebody who knows a lot about you and who you want to keep a good relationship with for many, many years, assuming you don't move or whatever. And that can make you a little nervous about asking too many questions, you know, am I questioning their authority, all that sort of stuff. But what I've experienced in my own life and what I've heard from experts over and over again is no doctor worth a darn is going to get their feelings hurt if you asked a bunch of questions. In fact, they want to help you to the degree that they can, and they want to give you the best service, generally speaking. And if somebody doesn't, if they do get hurt by that sort of thing, it may be a signal that you need to change doctors.
Yeah. Interesting. This is kind of crystallizing to me. This is really about areas of your life that you should negotiate, really, right? When we say ask questions, you're really negotiating. You're negotiating with your credit card company, your hospital, right?
Yeah.
You get a better deal.
Yeah. And one of the things that I address in the book is just how much people don't like to negotiate or to advocate for themselves. Even if they know that they're probably going to do pretty well at it. And that's unfortunate. And one of the things that I talk about is that people don't understand how much actual negotiating experience they have just in daily life, where maybe you're negotiating what you want the thermostat to be set at your house, or where you're going to go to dinner with a bunch of friends, or, you know, things like that. Little tiny things. The willingness and ability to negotiate and to ask certain questions and to just talk to people can really make a significant difference.
That makes a lot of sense, because, you know, what I always say is that you don't know what's going to happen when you ask somebody, you know, to negotiate, but you know what's going to happen if you don't. Nothing. You know, so you got nothing to lose. I mean, no one's going to come over to your house and beat you up with a baseball bat because you asked for a better rate on a credit card or a lower bill on at a hospital. So it didn't hurt to ask.
Yeah, and there are cases where you can overswing, or where you catch somebody on a bad day and you end up trying to negotiate, like in a job negotiation where the person you're talking to just isn't having it, and there can be some negative ramifications sometimes. But the truth is that by and large, the old idea of it doesn't hurt to ask usually is the case. So it's important for people to at least give it a shot most of the time.
Absolutely. I want to ask you one more before we go to break too. Housing. What kind of questions, what kind of negotiation can we do with housing?
Well, one of the most important things with housing is about, you know, your mortgage rate. And with that, it's still a negotiation, but some of what I talk about in the book is just the breakdown of the different types of mortgages and some of the different options that you have that can help you lower your rate that you may not, that the realtor may not tell you about, whether it's points or 15 years versus 30 or adjustable rate mortgages, that sort of thing, which obviously have pros and cons alongside them, but are questions that you can ask if your ultimate goal is to change the rate that you have. So that's one example.
Yeah. And you know, actually, we're going to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I'm going to tell you something that really pisses me off about borrowing on a mortgage, Matt. But we're going to be right back. We're halfway through our show. Got to pay some bills. But in the meantime, though, I want to, you guys, before we start back in the show, if you like what we do, then do something for us. Share the show with your friends or family on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe to our podcast. Takes you 2 seconds, but it really helps us out. Okay, so we are back now. And now I'm going to tell you what really pisses me off. When people borrow money, when they go to get a mortgage or even a car loan, they act as if they've won a prize. Oh my God, they approved me. They're going to lend me $300,000. And I'm like, you didn't win a prize. You're doing them a favor. They're not doing you a favor. So why wouldn't you negotiate? You know, I mean, it's almost like people are afraid to speak up because they're going to withdraw their approval of your loan. You know, you're the customer here. You're allowed to say, I'm not paying that fee. You know, and which I've done many times in mortgages. They're like, well, you know, it's, oh, as a matter of fact, just having me at a car dealership not long ago. Well, that's just the fee. You know, it's $2,500. That's just the normal fee. Everyone pays it. That's, well, everybody pays it but me. I ain't paying it. You know, I'll go somewhere else. Is that the kind of thing you would do in a housing or any number of other negotiations?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the car dealer is kind of the classic example of that with the tenting and the undercarriage protection and all that sort of fun stuff.
The delivery fee.
Yeah, exactly. And the good news is that there's never been more information out there about those sorts of things to help you prepare than there is now. And there's never been more ways to know what a good rate is, and also to compare different rates. Like, one of the primary things to help with your negotiation at a car dealer is to come in pre-approved for an auto loan from a credit union or, you know, a place like LendingTree, that sort of thing. And that can really help you frame that conversation to where there's the car dealer is less likely to hammer you to get your financing through them because you've already gotten it through somebody else.
Yeah. You know, when I bought this house, the house I'm sitting right now, about 20 years ago. And when I bought it, I did an inspection, of course, and the realtor calls me up and he goes, "Stacy, you need $700 worth of work done on the roof." And I said, "Great. You know, have the seller pay it." He said, "Well, I don't think the seller is going to pay it. It's only $700. It's nothing. You know, just eat it." And I said, "Oh, I'm so glad you think $700 is nothing. Then we'll take it out of your damn commission because it's nothing." And, right. and he said, "Well, let me call you right back." He called me back 5 minutes later and said, "The seller will eat it."
Yeah. You know,
it's important to do stuff like that when you're giving somebody a ton of money, and there ain't nothing wrong with asking for a better deal. What about shopping?
Well, with shopping, it's I in the book I kind of paint shopping with a pretty broad brush. So everything from, you know, looking for appliances or a couch or something like that to shopping for a new car and that sort of thing. And there are some spaces where you're probably not going to have a whole lot of success negotiating. Like, you're not going to walk up to the counter at Kroger and haggle over a loaf of bread and a six pack of Dr. Pepper. But if you are buying a new couch, or if you're buying a refrigerator, things like that, you may have more options than you realize. And especially if you are maybe at an independent kind of furniture store or appliance store, that sort of thing, where you may be actually able to talk to the owner or somebody who doesn't necessarily have to answer to a corporate hierarchy to get a deal. So again, it doesn't work everywhere, but it's usually worth asking in most places.
Would that be because they're relatively marked up, and a lot of those sales guys are on commission?
That's certainly some of it, yeah, and also some of it is just how competitive that space is, and yeah, if you're talking about. If you're talking about these big purchases, that's really one of the good things, because oftentimes, you know, you think that negotiations won't necessarily get you very far, but with shopping, it's one of those cases where it's almost like the bigger the ticket, the more likely you are to be able to negotiate a little bit. It's not certainly not entirely the case, but again, when you're talking about, you know, big appliances and furniture and that sort of thing, it can definitely be the case.
So one of the things that I've found, especially with appliances and furniture, is just asking about free delivery, yeah. You know, has saved me hundreds of dollars over my lifetime just for asking about free delivery. Like when they're like, "Okay, well, you know, delivery charge." And I'm like, "Well, you know, free delivery." And then also checking into price match policies is a huge one for me, because a lot of stores will do price matching, or like if I find something cheaper online than I find in the store, a lot of stores will price match that as long as you can show it to them. And so that's something that I've used too, because, you know, they're happy. Oh, I don't know if they're happy, but, you know, they'd rather have, you know, you go there and shop locally than lose a sale to somebody online.
Yep. Yeah. You know, yeah. And you were saying small stores, Matt, But I bought my refrigerator at Lowe's, and I asked for the manager and got a discount for a floor model. And also, I found a scratch on it. Maybe I put the scratch there. I don't know. But anyway.
Oh, that's one thing that we actually did at Kohl's once, interestingly enough, back when I was married. We were looking for a blender, and all we could see was the display model. And so we called for a manager, and we were just like, hey, we want this blender. Do you have one in the back? And she says, we don't, but we can sell you the display model at a 20% discount. So we're sold.
Yeah.
So that's what we did.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
What about traveling, Matt? This is something I do a lot too. What do you have in your book about negotiating travel expenses?
Yeah, with travel, it's certainly interesting because, again, that's one of those where it can really make a significant difference. And even things like if you have your flight canceled, and knowing that you don't have to accept that voucher that they're going to give you, you can tell them, no, the flight was canceled. You need to give me my money back. That's a significant thing to know. And then also we talk about things like getting an upgraded room at a hotel, and how that's kind of a classic example of the one of the underlying themes of the book, which is just how being nice can really be helpful. Because if you understand that the person behind the counter has probably been yelled at 10 different times during that day, and you can stand out a little bit by being nice and smiling at them and asking them about their day, that sort of thing can really make a difference. And it's not always going to work, and seasonality and all that sort of thing, but a little bit of niceness can go a long way.
Absolutely.
Stacey, you know, usually just flips him 100.
Well, you know, actually, Aaron,
that's a good way to be nice too.
Aaron and I, with our wives, stayed at a fancy hotel here in Fort Lauderdale last weekend for my wife's birthday. And I when I checked in, which I do every single time I go to a hotel, I'm like, you know, can you give me the Elvis suite? No one's going to know, you know. But I'm always like super friendly. And I'll say something to make them laugh, like Elvis suite, you know, and it didn't work in this case because the hotel was full. But it has worked for me in the past, though. And it really works at an airline ticket counter. Like you just said, Matt, if you go, oh, man, are you having a good day? Because what a pain in the ass your job must be. How can I make your life better? And next thing you know, you're getting upgraded. You're getting all kinds of people. If you just do a little bit of kindness, goes a hell of a long way.
Yeah, and it's hard because we've all been in situations where the flight's been canceled and we just want to yell and scream at somebody because we were supposed to be there in the evening and now we're not going to be there till the morning. But if you can kind of take a couple of deep breaths, go to your happy place and be calm and nice to the degree that you can, it can really help. It doesn't mean that you need to be a pushover and let somebody walk all over you. But being nice, and smiling can really help.
Well, and I found too, though, like I had a situation once where the airline was canceled. We were nice, we were smiling, we were, you know, whatever. And we were just behind somebody who had been yelling and was just basically told to go sit down and think about what they'd done. And we got up there and we were nice and we were smiling and we were just like, hey, you know, we know it's a rough go. Like, what are the options here? Those guys got us on the first available flight and they upgraded us to first class for no charge. We were like, yeah. And then the other thing that I do, which is really kind of silly and small, but like when I get a room with points, when I've paid for a room with points, you know how you show up there, they still take their credit card and they want to put a hold on it for incidentals. I just kind of smile and I just say, hey, like, is there, like, I paid for it with points and, you know, I don't usually get anything on the room. Can we just skip this and not put this hold on my credit card? And a lot of the time, like, they'll just override it. Like, the last three times I've gone, paid for a hotel with points, like, I've gotten away with not having to provide my credit card for incidentals.
That's really interesting.
Wow. But you know what? And here's something else too. I read this and I done it once. Get a candy bar or something, take it with you to the airport and give it to the first flight attendant that you see when you get on the plane. You must be having a tough day. Have some candy. Next thing you know, you're getting free drinks.
Yeah. Well, and that goes to one of the other points in the book is that if it doesn't work the first time, it never hurts to try again. In most cases, it doesn't hurt to try again, because there are times where you just catch a rep who's had a really bad day and they're just not in the mood to do anything for anybody. And then you call back an hour later or the next day, catch somebody in a better vibe, and it can work out for you.
So actually, Miranda, after you do that incidental trick, do you raid the minibar?
No, I do not. I do not. I do not. I am an honest person. Although one of my favorite things was I was going to a conference in DC, and there were two back-to-back conferences in DC a few years ago. And so I was going to be at the hotel for 10 days. And when I checked in, I was just like, oh, hey, like, are there any upgrades available? And I have no status. This is a hotel that I have no status at. There should be no upgrade for me. It's going to be a full hotel. It's a conference. And I was just like, oh, hey. And you know, I checked in early and I was just like, hey, like, are there any upgrades available? And he's like, sure. Yeah, I can put you on the executive floor. That nice young man. And then I told one of my friends about it, and we're in the elevator after I told him the story, and we're in the elevator heading up the thing, and people are like, man, there are no upgrades available. I couldn't get an upgrade. And my friend's just like, this bitch has no status, and she got upgraded. And I'm just like, yeah, because I got in early and I asked nicely.
Well, you know, yeah. You know what, you guys, we could tell stories all day, and these are fun stories to tell too, but we got a couple more we need to cover because we're going to run out of time here.
Oh, no.
What the next one you asked, and I really dread this one, and I'll tell you why, but the thing is, how about when you're trying to get paid more for your work? Now, the reason I hate this, Matt, just
yeah. I think Aaron and I are going to be talking to Stacy in the next couple of weeks.
Remember that this doesn't always work, okay, guys?
Yes.
How do you get paid more for your work, Matt?
Well, and it's funny, you're talking about timing. It's one of those where if you go into, say, at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon and say, hey, boss, can we talk about my raise? You're probably not going to get anywhere. But one of the interesting things that we lay out in the book is really just the idea of keeping track of your accomplishments and doing so on a weekly or however often you want to do it basis, to where when you are looking to get promoted or when you're asking for a raise, you have a list of all of the different things that you've done to choose from and pick the highlights and build the best case for you. And we've all got to-do lists that are 5,000 miles long. And the last thing we want to do is write down a couple of more things with the little thing that we helped with at work. But the truth is that stuff matters, and they're just data points that can help you make the argument to your employer or to the next person down the line that you deserve a little more money.
Yeah. And, you know, and actually I'll tell you, as somebody who's been paying other people for decades, if you come to me and you say, I need more money because I'm buying a house, or, you know, my kid's going to private school or whatever it is, I don't give a damn about that. But if you come to me and you say, here's the deal, I made this company $30,000 last month that would not have been made without my efforts, now you got my attention. You know, so tell me what you've done for me and I'll tell you what I can do for you.
Yeah. And, you know, when I led that meeting because the person was on vacation, or I did this in extra time, or things like that, and all of that stuff, we like to think that we'll remember when it comes time for a review, but, you know, we don't, and we're just imperfect. So if you can take a little bit of time to just scribble down a couple of things in a given week, it can really be useful.
Wait a minute. Why can't I? How is it that I can just give a candy bar to an airline attendant, but I can't just give a candy bar to Stacy and go like, "Hey, here's a candy bar. Can I get 10 grand?"
Remember, Aaron, the key here is that this doesn't always work. Okay, I have to emphasize that.
Yes.
Now, see, if you get me drunk, then the skies, I might buy you a Mercedes. I mean, who knows?
I need to come down to Fort Lauderdale and get Stacy drunk.
If nothing else, I'll at least get you drunk. Okay, we've got time. We've only got one more thing, and it is personal relationships, which is different than everything else we've talked about. But what's the most important questions you should be asking when you're involved in personal relationships?
Yeah, there are so many important ones. One of the key ones involves elderly parents and how nervous how scary it can be to approach mom and dad about their financial situation. But the truth is that it's something that you need to understand, because it is absolutely germane to your life and to your financial situation in most cases. And it's obviously one thing if you are an only child and it's just you having the conversation, but if you are part of a big family, have a bunch of siblings, it can be one of the most difficult and kind of politically complicated things to do. But talking to experts, the truth is that a lot of times mom and dad are willing to talk. You may not 100% like what they say, but it's still worth having that conversation.
Yeah. And I just want to just kind of point out, we do have an episode with Cameron Huddleston about how to approach that. And so we'll have that in the show notes for you all.
Quoted liberally in the book. She's
really?
Very, very smart about that. No, nobody knows more about that space than she does.
Oh, that's cool.
What about like your spouse? Does that apply here as well?
What's that saying? Divorce is so expensive because it's worth it.
Yeah. Now, see, what exactly. I do with my wife is I ask questions like this all the time. Can I buy you something? And that seems to really help our relationship.
Very nice. Yeah. No, it's funny. I always tell the story about when we were about to get married, we took a class before we could get married in the church. And one of the questions they asked was, how much can you spend before, before you have to tell your significant other about it? And I said something like $50. And my wife, fiance, said something like $500. And we were like, whoa, what's going on? And it turns out that neither of us had really thought about it.
Yeah.
And once we had the conversation, we ended up landing in a similar spot. And it was definitely worth having, even if it was a little awkward. So those sorts of conversations where when you're having it for the first time with a significant other, where you say, look, I'm not asking you for your bank account password or what your balances are. I just want to hear some of your goals and some of your basic thoughts about money and kind of let the conversation go from there.
Interesting.
And I think that's really important. One of the things, so I actually like my ex-husband, I joke, blah, blah. But one of the things that really struck me after our divorce and everything else was we talked about things like, oh, how much should we agreed we should be setting aside money for retirement. And we agreed on how much we should be setting aside for retirement. One thing we never talked about is what that retirement should look like. And so we had very different things in our minds about, you know, like for me, like retirement was going to be like travel everywhere. And after we had been married for a few years, we realized, oh my God, like my ex doesn't really care that much for travel. He finds it inconvenient and frustrating, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
He's not wrong.
But like, it was just a completely different view of things. And we had never talked about, we talked about like the nuts and bolts of like the basic numbers and this and that, and how much we're going to do this and how much are we going to set aside for that. And we have these kind of goals, but we never really talked about like what it would practically look like or what we would do or what our values were or what the things that mattered to us most were. And that turned out to be a real issue. Neither one of us was wrong. We just had different like spending priorities and different financial values, and they weren't always compatible. And these are things that we could have learned.
Way earlier. And we think about that, those sorts of conversations as it relates to stuff like kids and religion and all that kind of stuff. But money is every bit as important, and your goals and your compatibility there is really, really, really important. So worth having the conversation.
Just remember, folks, remember my advice. Can I buy you something? It always works. Okay, guys, we are out of time now. We're hard up against it. But we are never out of topic. So dig a little deeper, folks. You're going to find links to lots more info in our show notes. And remember, if your goal is to make more, to spend less, to retire rich, well, your online home is moneytalksnews.com. And don't forget to check out Miranda's online home as well. That is Miranda Marquit, MARQUIT.com. And of course, you want to visit Matt at his website. It's simple, mattschultz.com. If you've got a question, comment, or topic you'd like to suggest, tell us about it. Email us at hello@moneytalksnews.com. And like I said at the break, if you like what we do, do something for us. See, now we're negotiating. I gave you some podcasts. Now you give me some love by subscribing to our podcast. Takes you 2 seconds, but it really helps us. So if you like it, show us and subscribe. Matt, always a pleasure having you on our show. I'm Stacy Johnson.
I'm Miranda Marquit.
I'm Aaron Freeman.
Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. We're going to see you right here next time.